Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, live from the Auto Forum Studios, and we have a packed show today. We're going to talk local and a lot of national. It's a quiet day in the national sports front, but we do have some playoff baseball tonight. The Colorado Rockies and the Chicago Cubs will look to extend their season. It's the NL wild card tomorrow, Yankees A's tonight. Cubbies, Rockies. We will talk a little bit about this contest and the entire landscape of the playoffs with Bill Lasky. That'll be a little bit later on in the show. Bill, of course, a former pitcher for the San Francisco Giants. Also on the show today, we will talk NBA basketball. Preseason game two for the Utah Jazz tonight as they take on the Toronto Raptors. And also on the local sports front, we're going to give you the recap of everything that happened yesterday on the golf course. The golf season wrapping up right now in Taylorsville. And tomorrow night, right here on KOAL, we're going to air the Helper and Mont Harmon middle school football game. I love it when we get to go to the high school, do the whole setup. We get the middle school kids on the air. That'll be tomorrow night. To get us set up for that, we're going to be joined by Coach Jordan Blank in his first year as head coach at Mont Harmon. That'll actually be next segment. A packed Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports, and it's coming your way right after this on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We've talked a lot of football during the Coach's Corner over the last month and a half. Today we're going to talk middle school football. Now, tomorrow night on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the Helper Rams and the Mont Harmon Pirates will meet for the final time this season at Carbon High School under the lights. Should be a soggy football game. I'm looking forward to it. We're actually going to bring you the live play-by-play call right here on KOAL, and you'll be able to watch at KOALITV.com. Joining us right now to talk a bit about the football season and about tomorrow night's game, we have Coach Jordan Blank of the Mont Harmon Pirates. Coach, it's a pleasure to get you in today. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Jordan. I'm glad to be back on here.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been probably 4 years, yeah. So, or more.
Yeah, it's come full circle. Now you're actually coaching here in the local area. I know this is your first year at Mont Harmon, your first year with a football program. How's it been up to this point?
It has been awesome. I love the kids. They're doing what they're supposed to. It's been great that way. It's also been awesome to be back in the school and to work with some of those coaches that I haven't seen in a while and try and get this program as a feeder program for the high school there. So that's what our goal is, and hopefully it'll work out here in the next few years.
I'm glad you mentioned that, and that's what we can start with. As a first-year head coach at Mont Harmon, how much emphasis have you put on actually getting these kids ready for the next level? And what I mean by that question is, how much interaction do you have with the Carbon High School coaching staff?
Well, I mean, our home games are played at Carbon High School this year. The field at Mont Harmon was not playable, so all of our games are at the high school, so I see him on a weekly basis. And what happens is, you know, well, he comes into our locker room sometimes after games, talks to these kids, and they see the head coach, and that's awesome. If they can see the head coach and they can see what he's about, and then we can run the same system, it just makes it that much easier for him when they're coming up to the program as freshmen.
Terminology, I know, is key for kids at this age. And when you and I were talking off of the cuff, you made mention that you try to keep the terminology the same. That way they're familiar with it when they get to the next level.
Yeah. I mean, football is, it's almost a new language. You have so many different things, and coaches like different terminology, I guess. And so we're trying to run the same system as Coach Huntsman terminology wise. Sometimes we'll have a little bit different setup, but that's easy to fix as long as the terminology is there, and that's our goal.
As far as becoming a coach, is that difficult? Because, I mean, you were a player for so long, and I know that was your passion, and you were really good at football when your body allowed it. So has it been difficult to be on the sidelines as a coach?
Sometimes, yes. Yeah. The competitive nature is still there, and thankfully, that's why I've got the great coaches staff that I have. I've got Coach Wild, Coach Jeff Blank. He was the head football coach a couple years ago, and then my Coach Powell, and he also coached at the high school too as an assistant coach. So that way they can help teach me how to channel that aggressiveness in a different way and that competitiveness, because sometimes, yeah, the kids, they're flat, and I get it. And as a player, it was easy for me to pick up my teammates. It's a little bit differently as a head coach, because you can't do some of the things or say some of the things that you used to say as a player. And so you have to kind of just let it flow and let the players pick each other up that way. And so that's a little bit different to get used to.
Well, let's talk about the team and how you guys have fared so far. Entering this game against Telford tomorrow night, you guys are 4-2 on the season. How have you assessed the way the kids have played this year?
You know what? They've played awesome. It's been a learning year for them. It's been a learning year for all the coaches also, but the thing that I've looked at is we have gotten better every single week, and that's key. We still haven't peaked yet, and we've got two more games, and that's what I really like. We've played great up to this point. Our defense is phenomenal. We usually give up less than 100 yards a game, and our offense is starting to click now. We've got some great eighth graders. We've got some new sixth graders coming up and some seventh graders that we'll have next year that are awesome, and they continue to grow, and I'm excited for this year and also next year.
When you talk about the kids progressing each week, is it easy to sit back and kind of critique yourself over the last 6-7 weeks and say, you know, I've improved in this regard. I've improved in that regard as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that you want out of a coach too. You don't want your coach to peak in the first week. And I mean, there's things that we learn on the sideline, and we learn in practice also. And that's what's great is our playbook it's always changing. Our formations are the same, but we start to see what our players are doing great, and we want to go to that. So that's something new as a coach that I've had to get used to, but it's been awesome having the help of players coming up and saying, hey, coach, I like this play. We should keep doing this. And if you listen to your players, I mean, the success will come.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Jordan Blank of the Mount Harmon Pirate football team. Tomorrow, they'll take on the Helper Rams at Carbon High School. Kickoff for that game is set for 6 p.m. Live coverage will begin here on KOAL at 5:30. Coach, let's talk about the kids. First off, one of the things that stands out to me when I take a look at the roster, the numbers, the amount of kids that you have on this year's team, that's great, because I know all the way across the state, when we look at the high school level, numbers are down. I mean, some of the schools, such as Judge Memorial, have 23 kids on the squad this year. I know numbers are down in Emory County. They only have 4 seniors this season. So to look at a roster and see the amount of depth that you have, well, that's refreshing from a football fan standpoint.
It is great. And it's great as a coach too, because if somebody were to get hurt, I've got plenty of other kids to come up and take their place. And, you know, it helps with the competitiveness in practice. I've got so many kids, and I'm able to put each other up and put the best up against the best and compete every day in practice that way. It also helps the high school. I mean, our goal at Mount Harmon is to feed the high school. If we can continue as a sporting program for football, if we can get these, I've got probably 24 eighth graders. If all 24 eighth graders will go up and play at the high school, us as a junior high, we're doing our job.
No question. I have to ask, the high school has had some success this season. They beat Emory. They were highly competitive against Grantsville last week. Do the younger kids pay attention to that?
They do. I mean, our whole talk in the locker room in practice that week they beat Emory was, man, did you guys watch that game? That game was awesome. And that's what we like. We like these kids going to these games. We encourage them to wear their Mount Harmon jerseys to the games. It's fun to be in that atmosphere. And hopefully, I get that they want to be with their friends and they want to hang out, but I hope that they are learning some things as they're there watching this program, because it's getting better, and that's what we'd like to see.
Let's talk about some individuals on this year's squad. We'll start with the quarterback and Wyatt Falk. Wyatt plays multiple sports. I know he's a standout baseball player as well. He's been your guys' quarterback. He's a talented kid all the way around.
He really is. He's smart in the classroom, too, and it shows how smart he is. We've picked up a hurry-up offense. Sometimes we'll go up to hurry-up, and sometimes I'll just give him rein, and he calls the play how he sees it out there. So that helps out a lot. He's a winner. Some of these kids, I mean, they're 5-time state champs in baseball. They know how to win, and they've brought that to the football team also. They love winning. I'd like to say that they just hate to lose in general, and that's great. And they bring that in practice, and every day in practice, if we can compete and you can win in practice, you're only going to win in the game.
I know it's cliche, but for those who have played sports or they're around sports all the time, they know exactly what you mean when they say these kids know how to win. There's a difference in knowing how to win and wanting to win. There's a difference there.
Yep. And I'll go back to just our game last week against Moab. I mean, we give up a late touchdown in the fourth quarter, and they're up by four, and we pull out this great drive, and they just came out with the intensity that I've never seen before, but they wanted to win. They knew how to win, and they've just learned over time and time from trial and error from the time they were in Little League that they need to win, and that's what we like to see.
Let's talk about the defensive side of the ball. You mentioned Bradley Wood to me, someone that has dominated in the trenches on both sides of the ball, but we'll talk about it defensively. Anytime you can apply pressure in the backfield, especially at this age group, you definitely have a huge advantage defensively. And you've talked about how dominant the defense has been, so I would assume that Bradley's a big part of that.
Oh, he's our big man there. He averages probably 2 sacks a game. He's in the backfield. He's pushing kids around when he needs to, and he's a hustler. He knows how to get to the ball. He knows where to find the ball, and kids feed off of him. If they see him getting to the ball, everyone else is pursuing to the ball, and it's a team game. After once Bradley shows up, everyone else is following right behind him.
I know it goes back to when you were playing high school. I remember interviewing you and your teammates. You guys always circled the game against Emory. Coaches would try to downplay it and say it's just another game. It's not. No. I mean, you guys circle it. Let's be real. Is it the same with Mont Harmon and Helper? Do they circle the game on the calendar against Helper? They do? Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's great, and it's fun because they know each other.
Mm-hmm.
I see you in the halls sometimes. We used to be classmates, and now we're at different schools. It's fun because they know each other. But I hope it's to the point where, yeah, it's a great game and we should circle this one because we're in-town rivals and all of that. But we are going to go to the same high school. And that hopefully we can start to change a few things with that, and we can change the fact that we are going to be teammates one day. Yeah, it's fun and we can play against each other, but we're going to pick each other up now and we're going to be great teammates in the future.
Well, Coach, I definitely appreciate the time. It's nice to have you back in the studio talking football once again. Best of luck tomorrow night against Helper, and I'm sure we'll talk again real soon.
Hey, thank you, Jordan. Thanks for having me in.
Absolutely. That's Coach Jordan Blank of the Mont Harmon Pirates. Tomorrow they'll take on the Helper Rams. And again, we'll have live coverage for you right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Plenty more coming up when we return. We're going to talk Major League Baseball. Tonight we have a wild card matchup, the Rockies and the Cubs. We're going to be joined by former big league pitcher Bill Lasky to break down tonight's game. That's coming up next, right here on Drive Time Sports.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini. Here comes a comeback. The
kid is back, back on track again. Everybody loves a comeback. We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios. It's Tuesday, and we have playoff baseball. Yesterday, it was a lot of fun. We had two, I don't want to call them playing games, but tiebreaker games in the National League. The Brewers topping the Cubs, and then the Dodgers getting the best of the Rockies, and that sets up tonight's one-game playoff. The Rockies and the Cubs have to go toe-to-toe once again, and then tomorrow we'll have another wild card matchup between the A's and the Yankees. And joining us right now to talk a bit about both those games, we have Bill Lasky, former Major League pitcher, on the phone with us right now. Bill, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I know that you enjoyed the games yesterday. I know I did as well. It was an entertaining day of baseball, to say the least.
It sure was, and I tell you what, the first game, Brewers against the Cubs, that was a fascinating game. Of course, I'm a Christian Yelich fan. I hope he can pull out the MVP, getting the first base hit to score the first run, and then all the numbers that were against him. But they came on, The Cubs came on toward the end, but it wasn't enough. And then the second game, I was pulling for your Rockies. I was hoping the Rockies would go into L.A., but, boy, the Dodgers have their number. They swept them last time the Rockies were there. And sure enough, they just didn't have enough energy until later in the game. And when you score two runs in a ninth inning down five, it's just too tough to come back in a ninth inning against the Dodgers like that.
It really is. And, I mean, when you look at the rosters, I know you and I had this conversation a little bit off of the cuff. It's almost ridiculous in a sense that the Dodgers were in a play-in game with that Rocky lineup. Now, I'm not taking a shot at the Rockies when I say that, but when you take a look at the payroll and the level of ability that the Dodgers have offensively on that team, though, they should have won the NL West going away.
No doubt about it. When you're seeing some of the guys, and then they trade to get Machado and some of the players that were key players in this lineup all year, and you're tied at the end of the year, and of course Colorado spent some money on their bullpen, some extras there too, and you know, I just thought Colorado was going to have enough, especially how they played going down the stretch, and the Dodgers played well too. They came in and beat the hell out of the Giants three straight. But I thought Colorado was going to have enough to beat them. But you're absolutely right. When you got a payroll like that and you're looking at superstars from A to Z on that lineup and that roster, they should have ran away with the NL West. Now, of course, Arizona faltered toward the end. Now Colorado plays the Cubs today in a wild card game. I just think it's going to be really tough for the Cubs to lose two home games in this two-game playoffs that they've been in.
Well, I agree with you. And again, I'm not taking a shot at the Rockies when I say this, but I'm going to be realistic. If you'd have told Joe Maddon at the beginning of the season, the only thing standing in front of him would be Kyle Freeland getting to the NLDS, I think 10 times out of 10 times he would take that, especially knowing that John Lester is going to represent the Cubs tonight on the mound.
Should be a good pitching match. I've watched both of these guys all year, and they've both been pretty much aces for their team. Lester has pitched very well for the Cubs, and of course, Freeland's pitched outstanding for the Rockies. So we're gonna see two lefties go at it, and we're going to see who scores first and see who gets to these bullpens, because both these bullpens have been used pretty much toward the end of the year.
Well, and I guess this was kind of the strategy going into it yesterday, right? I mean, knowing that it wasn't a make-it-or-break-it game, you're in the postseason regardless. This was just tiebreakers yesterday. I thought it was interesting to see the way Joe Maddon or even Bud Black, knowing that you were down 5-0, you know, in the seventh inning in that Dodger game yesterday, how he would actually utilize his bullpen moving forward. That's something that you just don't see every day, knowing that it's a tiebreaker, not a play-in game. Bill, how did you assess the way both managers handled the situations yesterday?
You know, you're absolutely right. The Dodgers had to go strong. They went to Baez, and of course, he's been one of their strong points in their bullpen. Jansen came on, just still doesn't look like that same devastating closer years back. We don't know if the heart issue has anything to do with it, pushing them a little bit too much. But on the other side, Colorado looked like they kind of pulled back a little bit, knowing that they had a wild card game to play today. Today, everything's in. Everybody's putting their spikes on that 25-man roster. They're going to go at it. Interesting to see now what the Yankees and the A's are talking about now by going to their bullpens early. They're starting to talk about that. And you and I have touched on this years back. Houston did it. All your winners of the World Series. Seems like they put that fourth and fifth starter in the bullpen, and they have no problems going to them first ones up.
The Dodgers have done that with Maeda as well. I mean, technically, he's a fifth starter on the team. They used him exclusively out of the bullpen last year, and it paid dividends up until the World Series.
That sure did, and you're going to see more of that. I think that's what pitching staffs do. They'll throw three out, first three starters, and maybe use the fourth, depending on if they're up or down, and then push that fifth guy into the bullpen. Or, as you say, you take that third or fourth starter and you use them in middle relief where you can get two, three, four innings out of them. So it is a cat-and-mouse game, too. But these guys have looked at stats. They've watched what guys can do against righties and lefties. They have all the numbers, and still they switch to the World Series when they've got to play the American League team. And then both sides are pretty much equal because they might have played them in interleague, but most of the time they really haven't played an abundance of games, small sample. So we'll see what happens when it gets to that point. But it's going to be a fun night tonight as well as tomorrow when the Oakland A's entertain the Yankees in New York. Two good wild card games sets up all these matchups as we've talked about all year.
Yeah, we can talk about the A's and Yankees. We can skip ahead to tomorrow night. Hendricks going up against Severino. Severino has been outstanding for the Yankees now in two seasons, and there's really no surprise that New York is ruling him out. As far as Hendricks for the A's, for those who maybe aren't too familiar with Oakland, and let's be honest, this is a team that's not exactly sexy. You know, they don't have the big names. They float under the radar, and that's why I love the Oakland A's so much. You know, we've talked about guys like Chris Davis, and we've talked about guys like the Olsons on this roster. That's why I like the A's. But, Bill, in this pitching matchup, why does Hendricks make sense?
Well, I just think he's going to matchups, too. You know, I think he was looking at a couple other possibilities, and he waited till almost this morning till he posted who he wanted to pitch. And Severino got lit up in Oakland last time they were there to get six runs off of him. So I don't think there's a fear in this Oakland A's lineup. They're the underdog, no doubt, and that's how they've been all year. And they have 90 or more wins. This team is definitely that team that don't take them lightly, because they'll come in there and snatch that game and they'll move on to the next step. So I think the Yankees need to be quiet more than, look what we're going to do. We're going to win this whole thing. We want to play the Dodgers in the World Series. All these one-liners coming out of that clubhouse. You got to get past the wild card first. You can't be looking forward, because those one-game playoffs, as you know as well as I do, they can be done in one hit, one walk, one wild pitch, and one little thing can happen, and you're out of the playoffs completely.
Well, and when I look at this A's roster, you're exactly right. You talk about just one swing of the bat. Another guy who's under the radar, and I am really looking forward to this night. We know that we've talked about Chris Davis, and you and I have talked about Matt Olson, and we've talked about Jed Lowry, but what about Matt Chapman? I mean, this guy's offensive win over replacement throughout the year is 5. That's a pretty big number. And again, we're talking about guys that kind of float under the radar. And this is a very young guy. He's only 25 years old. That's 278, Bill. I mean, there are some guys in this lineup that I think are going to test Severino early.
I agree totally with you. And when you look at his Gold Glove at third, he's an outstanding defensive third baseman. A young talent that's really pushed himself into a key player in this lineup. And you look at the other side, Olson, the left-hand swing. He's got a nice swing for right field in New York. So don't count these A's out. They're going to come in there and battle. And if they can get some early runs quick, you might see a new pitcher out there every inning known Bob Melvin.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bob Melvin, he was very, strategic, very out of the ordinary with the way he handled his starters down the stretch, knowing that they were already qualified for the playoffs. And when we talk about Chapman, he played pretty much every game from July until that final week. Melvin started resting some of the starters later on in the season. And Bill, I know that you see that, but this is another team that was competing for the AL West, and I think Melvin was a little bit more careful, knowing that odds are they were going to play in the one-game playoff.
Yeah, I think they saw that a long time. You know, they were trying to, and you and I talked about this way in the middle of June, where the American League was pretty much was cut and dry at that time. And we just kind of wavered through the last couple months knowing what was going to happen. We just didn't know if Oakland was going to be the home team for this wild card. And, of course, the Yankees got hot in September and they pulled it out. It is cut and dry. There's no doubt about it. Houston, Cleveland, Boston. And these two teams are the best 5 teams in the American League. That's one thing we know, where if you go to the National League, you don't really have that one team that everybody's like, Milwaukee's going to win it. No, Atlanta's going to win it. Oh, the Dodgers should win it. It's different. And that's what's great about the game of baseball. American League's pretty much cut and dry. The National League, flip a coin, because anything can happen. But this one-game playoff, tonight especially, Colorado at Chicago, so much travel for Colorado. They leave Colorado, go to L.A., they play an afternoon game, back on a plane, going to Chicago. You just don't know how much that's going to take out of their legs, take out of their concentration, take out of their momentum. So we'll see what happens tonight as well as tomorrow. But baseball's back. Good time of the year, October, and we're having some good entertainment for us.
No, we definitely have. We definitely do. There's no question about that. Bill, tonight, who do you like? You like the Cubs or the Rockies?
Well, I'm a Rocky fan. I've been pushing the Purple Eaters all year. I wanted them to see they win the NL West. A big Nolan Arenado fan. I just hope that he gets that playoff burst. He had a great line the other day. I'm so tired of seeing the Dodgers win. I'm so tired of seeing the Giants have rings, and we always seem to be the second best. Well, I'm hoping to hell that Arenado gets that chance on stage tonight. And they beat the Cubs, knocked the Cubs out. And then they got to go play Milwaukee, which will be a tough series. But I just think, I just hope the Rockies can beat the Cubs. I'm not a big Cub eater.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I'll tell you, and this is jumping way ahead, but there's a realistic possibility we could have the Rockies and the Braves in the National League Championship Series. And there is no baseball pundit on God's green earth that could have predicted that. We're 4 wins, 7 wins away from seeing that happen.
Yeah, and it could happen. I mean, you never know, and that's what's great about this. You know, the underdog might win it all. It's who's hot, who's not at the end. And that's what I really thought. Colorado had a good chance of beating the Dodgers yesterday, but, you know, Buehler just pitched a great game, and they just couldn't get any offense going. Now they're back in Chicago. Now they got to go against Lester, and Lester pinches those corners so well, and he does very well against right-handed hitters. So it's going to be a battle tonight, but a good game on TV tonight. It'll be interesting. Everybody will be watching. That's the only game on the tube, and it'll be a fun game, and let's just hope Colorado pulls it off.
I had to jump back to the AL for a second. I know Terry Francona is one of your friends. Do they have a chance against the Astros in a 5-game set?
I don't believe so. Again, Cleveland always does these magical things in the playoffs, and their offense is just so dynamic, and that's one thing. And plus, you got Kluber who can pitch 3 times in a series, and he's majestic. He's that kind of guy that can climb the mountain by himself. But I just think Houston's got the starting pitching. Their team has definitely come around through all the injuries. I just think Houston's going to be the team to beat, and I say that even through Boston and New York.
I agree with you. I don't want to sound like I'm down on the Red Sox because they had a tremendous regular season.
Oh my goodness, they have.
But the Astros were beyond brilliant over the final 2 months, Bill.
I agree with you there, and once all those injuries came back, and Bergman just had a great year, and these guys are starting to come together. You know, Verlander and that starting staff, getting Gerrit Cole, I think those are the pitchers that are going to make an attack on any kind of offense. And, you know, it's not like, oh, we can get the next guy because the next guy's as good as this guy. So they have the weapons in the pitching department as well as the offense, and they're world champions from last year, so they know the pressures that are in front of them. So I think the Astros will win it nationally. I sure would like to see Milwaukee or Colorado get into it because they're two fresh teams that love to play good baseball, and they're both solid teams. Hey, I'm on the Rockies bandwagon tonight, and whoever beats the Brewers, if the Brewers go forth, because I like Milwaukee and what they've done.
And the Dodgers-Braves series, at this point, I think the Braves are playing with house money because this is a team that, in my mind, is at least a year, maybe even 2 years ahead of schedule. And the Dodgers have all the talent in the world. The Braves are going to be massive underdogs. They got to go to Chavez Ravine for the first 2 games of this series. Do you give the Braves a chance?
I always give the Braves a chance because you never thought they would win a division. They
right.
weren't even supposed to be this good. And they put together a good season. And, you know, their shortstop's out with a hand injury. He got hurt, but you know what? You got Freeman, you got Markakis, and those are two veteran players that have had good seasons, and we'll just see if their pitching can hold through.
Bill Lasky, always great to get you on the show, Bill, to talk a little baseball. Please let the listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, I'm at Lasky on 19 on Twitter. That's about pretty much all I got going on now, watching games like fans, and talking to you every week will be fun here as the playoffs continue, but just a good time of year for playoff baseball.
Bill, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll do it again next week.
All right, Jordan. Take care, buddy.
We've got to break one more time. When we return, we'll talk NBA basketball. The Utah Jazz will continue the season tonight, the preseason, I should say, tonight. They'll take on the Toronto Raptors. We'll talk NBA right after this.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll it. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios. And it's time to talk some NBA basketball. The Utah Jazz have one preseason game under their belt already. They'll play another one tonight. They take on the Toronto Raptors at 7 o'clock, one of 5 games on the slate tonight as far as the NBA goes. And joining us right now, we have our Drive Time Sports NBA insider, Jameson Welsh, on the phone right now. Jameson, it's been far too long. I think it's been about 2 months since we've talked some NBA basketball on the show, at least with you. So I appreciate you taking out the time to join us today.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it.
Always look forward to it, that's for sure. Hey, NBA basketball is back. I know Sunday, the big story was the premiere, the debut of LeBron James in a Los Angeles Laker uniform. September basketball is always tricky. The preseason has been shortened a little bit. I mean, the season opener, we're about 2 weeks away from the start of the NBA season. Talk about the, I guess we could say, the anticipation of seeing LeBron in a Laker uniform, because that's the storyline that dominated the offseason. But for me, it really didn't sink in until I watched him play Sunday night on ESPN that, wow, LeBron's really a Laker.
Yeah, that's when it was really, you know, really official. I mean, you know, a lot of stuff has happened over the last few months, but when it came down to it, you know, he's a Laker, and he's a guy that, you know, When it came down to it, he looks right in Laker uniform. You know, someone told me something a while back that, like, Lakers always find a way to get a guy. They're always going to have a superstar on their team one way or another. They may go a couple years without having someone, or might have a couple down years here and there. They had some down years in the 70s before they got Kareem, and they had a couple down years in the 90s and whatnot. But they're always going to have a guy, you know, from Kareem to Magic to, you know, Shaq, Kobe, and now modern day, you know, LeBron James. And, you know, there are some announcements last week about, you know, the agency that represents LeBron James, who he has a lot of control over. They signed another guy that's going to be probably the best player in the league in a couple of years, Anthony Davis. So there's a lot of things going on. With LeBron, it's not just the basketball part. There's so much other moving parts and pieces. It almost seems like the Lakers have forged almost like a partnership with LeBron and his people. That's what it seems like. Giving KCP $30 million for 2 years, you know, bringing LeBron on, getting him 4 years, so he's going to be here for a while. So like a nice partnership. So we're going to see what takes place. I think the Lakers are going to benefit a lot from it in a lot of different ways. But at the end of the day, like, everyone makes the big thing about LeBron and his off the court stuff. LeBron does this every summer. He's a very busy guy, but he came because of basketball reasons. If he wanted to be in LA, he could went to the Clippers, but he didn't because that roster's not that good. He looks at the Lakers like, hey, I got some young guys I can do some stuff with, and if not, we can make a couple moves and be right there with it. So it's going to be a good situation overall.
He definitely fits with this squad, and I don't know, and I don't want to spend the whole segment talking about the Lakers, but this is definitely something that I think is relevant. As I'm watching this game on Sunday night, this is a much better team than what he has had in Cleveland since Kyrie left, for sure. So I guess that's what, last season. But I mean, even going back to the years when Kyrie was there and Kyrie had gone down with an injury, this is a much better team than what LeBron has had in the last little while. And because of that, I believe the Lakers are a top three team of the Western Conference. Now, if they're not top three at season's end, I'm telling you right now, nobody wants to play this team in the postseason. I'm going to stand by it. Barring a major injury, this is a top three team of the West. I really believe that the pieces all fit for LeBron. And make no mistake about it, Jameson, when LeBron decided to sign in LA, you mentioned the younger pieces, but he had a say and had to have loved what the Lakers held in front of him as far as an idea for this season. He's at a stage in his career where he can't just give seasons away. All right, the goal for LeBron is to win as many championships as possible. So he likes what he has in LA, or he wouldn't have signed there.
Of course. When it comes down to it, I mean, he knows the NBA. He knows the roster. He knows how this works. He's looking at the team like, okay, I like this young. I can do this with this guy, et cetera, et cetera. He is a very calculated guy. He's not going to make a move if he doesn't feel he can win or at least be competitive. But also, they have assets that you can move, too. There's a lot of, you know, they have some assets that other teams may want. So if they want to get better, if they feel that, hey, you know what, they need to make a move, or, hey, you know, we might get a free agent or two over the summer. We can't afford to pay everybody. You know what? Let's move someone. We have to pay soon. So there's a lot of different things going on, a lot of different ways you can play it out. But no, the Lakers are in a good spot. They have a lot of good young players that are eager to learn. You don't have stubborn young players. This is Minnesota, where you have young guys that think they know everything. You have a situation where there's guys that are eager to learn. There's guys that, you know, they're like, hey, you know what? We can make this work here. We can really do something here. So I'm kind of excited to see what's going to happen. I kind of want to see how this is going to play out. The defense is going to take time because you have a bunch of new guys, but they're going to be okay. Like, they're going to be an exciting team to watch. They're going to have ups and downs like most teams do when you're integrating a lot of different players. But for the most part, I'm excited to see what's going to happen. I think they have a good solid situation going forward. And I think the sky's the limit for this team. I don't think there's – obviously, they're not good as Golden State. Remains to be seen how good Houston's going to be this year. But after that, I think anyone out west, you can make an argument from Portland to the Pelicans to the Thunder, Lakers. You could argue a bunch of different teams, the Jazz. You could argue a bunch of different teams in that same space about who's going to be good and who's not.
Again, we're being joined right now by Jameson Welsh, our NBA Drive Time Sports Insider. Let's talk about another storyline that has dominated the NBA storylines over the last, couple of weeks. That's the Jimmy Butler situation in Minnesota. I do believe that Jimmy Butler will have a new team by the time the regular season starts. Where? Well, I think it's going to be the Eastern Conference. I definitely don't believe that Minnesota is going to trade him within the conference. I know he, for some reason, has it in his mind he wants to get to the Los Angeles Clippers. I don't know why, but at the same time, he's going to have a new team in the Eastern Conference. What's the holdup right now with this particular deal?
Well, Jordan, there's several things. There's the GM saying, you know what, he's not for trade. He's not for trade. We're not trading him. And you got the owner who's like, hey, call me. We're going to get this done. So no one knows what the hell's going on. And that's a really bad situation when your front office isn't on the same page. That's one of the worst situations you can actually have, actually, because the best organizations, everybody's on the same page, from the owner on down to people who sweep the floors at the stadium. Minnesota has had a horrific ownership, GM, front office situation since they've been in the league. It's been well documented how poor they are. It's well documented how bad their owner is. They don't get talked about because they're in Minnesota and really no one cares about Minnesota Timberwolves. That's just how it goes. However, with that being said, it's a situation where Tibbs got paid a lot of money to basically be a guy that is just there. What I personally would do, if I am the T-Wolves, I get rid of him. I get back the best offer. If I call the Clippers, say, hey, wants to go there, give me Tobias, give me unprotected first, and give me Patrick Beverly or something like that. We make it work. Or, you know, some mixture like that. Just get rid of him because he's not going to sign there next year. The longer this goes on, the worse the offers get. Get back a guy. Tobias might not be an all-star, but he's a productive player. He's a guy that can play. Give me back a guy that can play and keep him moving.
You know, I guess when I look at the entire scenario, and this goes with almost every NBA trade, you're never going to get equal or fair value for an all-star. At this stage in the game, there's even less leverage for a team like Minnesota. I mean, this is something that if you're a Timberwolf fan, you think, why couldn't this deal have been something to this magnitude have been, I guess, executed around the draft, which I guess gives you hope, especially with Karl Anthony Towns getting the massive extension that he's getting. All in all, it's just horrible timing for this franchise. It almost seems like when it rains, it pours. It's a team that's underachieved for the last couple of seasons. Look, if I'm Minnesota, I'm trying to get Jimmy Butler out of town as quickly as possible. You don't need him around this young core. It's an unneed. Right now, they are what they are. And I don't know that Minnesota makes the playoffs with Jimmy Butler. They definitely don't make it without him. So I think right now is the right time, Jameson, to move on. You don't need this type of negativity moving into the regular season with a young core.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And it's not just negativity. It's a situation where if he's going to not play, it doesn't help you. You know, that's the thing. It's one thing if he's going to play, he's going to be there, et cetera. But if he's not going to play, he's not going to be there, then it really doesn't help you. And you got to answer questions. Your guys got to answer questions. Not a good situation all the way around. So me personally, if I'm the T-Wolves, I try to move them. There's a lot of offers out there that can be made. Take the best one, move on, and try to build your team and try to invest in your young guys. Got a couple of guys that can play. Depends on what you think of Andrew Wiggins. I'm not a huge fan of him, but there's talent there. It's up to the coaching staff and the team to get the best out of him if that's possible.
Again, Jameson Welsh talking NBA basketball with us here on Drive Time Sports. Jameson, let's move on. I want your top storyline as the regular season nears. What are you most looking forward to?
So this is Christmas. That sounds kind of crazy. It kind of reminds me of when the Lakers went back-to-back in 09 and 010 and going into the following season, people really weren't talking about them. But the Warriors have just won back-to-back championships, and no one's really talking about them. There's all a bunch of stories, whether it's the LeBron, Lakers, what's going on with the Celtics, getting their team back. Can Houston, you know, get back to where they were? Can OKC do this? Very few people are talking about the Warriors. Like, very few. Like, they're not dominating the storylines like a team that just won back-to-back championships and won the last three out of the four should, in my opinion. Like, I really think they should be getting more media attention, as crazy as that sounds. The kind of roster they have, the kind of pedigree they have, the kind of, you know, the kind of run they've been on for the last 4 years, you would think they'd be, you know, a little bit more dominating the headlines, but, you know, they aren't, and that's fine. But also, I think there's a story that really no one's talking about. Kevin Durant has not signed a long-term deal in Golden State. Like, everything has been a one-plus-one. One-year deal. Well, this smoke, this fire. There's a lot of stuff saying that he might end up in New York, he might end up in L.A. Don't be surprised if he does leave sooner than later.
Yeah. I mean, well, you've got to kind of be out in the night if you think he's going to end his career in Golden State, right? That's not going to happen.
No, that's definitely not going to happen. But there's been a lot of smoke regarding his next move and when it's going to happen. You know, I don't know. I mean, Kevin Durant's a different guy. He does things on his own accord. He does things, you know, a little bit differently. You know, he does things what he feels. That's his right. He's able to do that. He's done a lot in this game to be able to put himself in that position to do so. So, by all means, there's nothing wrong with that. However, with that being said, it would not surprise me if he were to end up in a different uniform next season.
Let me ask you this, and again, I know that this is kind of the talk that drives people nuts with the start of the regular season. What are the odds he ends up in Oklahoma City? I think at some point in time in his career, he ends up in a Thunder uniform once again. I really do.
I think he goes back, but not anytime soon. I think L.A. and New York are bigger options than people are thinking. I think L.A. is a bigger option than people are putting on.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. I definitely would.
It's a bigger option only because him and LeBron are tight, and I think he wants to play with LeBron before it's too late. And when I mean too late, meaning that LeBron's not an elite player. I think he wants to play with LeBron for a year or two. And also, you know, I think he wants to experience being a Laker. You know, this is kind of how things go. I mean, Kevin Durant, the last 2 years, he's won two championships, and people think of him way differently than they did before he went to Golden State. People are always going to have their opinions and thoughts about him. If he goes 3-for-3 with the Warriors, there's nothing else to prove. There's literally nothing else. There's nothing for him to prove there. They've won their rings. They would have closed out that arena winning it. It would not surprise me if he winds up in L.A. or New York. Anywhere else, I'd be surprised. But those are two places I've heard some stuff to where, hey, you know what, this might actually happen.
Jameson Welsh, again, our NBA Drive Time Sports Insider. We're going to be talking with Jameson throughout the entire year. Next week, we'll talk more Utah Jazz basketball. Like I said, tonight, the Jazz will take on the Toronto Raptors. Start time for that game is set for 7 p.m., and then we'll talk more about the Jazz in the coming days because, again, it's an exciting year for Jazz fans. Year two of Donovan Mitchell. Jameson, what are you expecting from Donovan before I let you go?
I expect the guy's going to improve upon last year. I also expect the guy's going to I think he's going to carry the Jazz to a top five record in the West. I really do. However, the seedings don't really matter in the West. It's all about matchups. But I think Rudy Gobert carries the team. As Rudy goes, the team goes. And that's kind of how it's been for a while. But that's where it ends up. As long as Rudy's playing well, they're going to be just fine. So I can't wait to see. I think we have a good competitive Western Conference on hand. The only problem with the Jazz is can they score enough? Because versus the elite teams, you're going to have to get the 110, 115 consistently. I don't know if they can do that just yet.
Jameson, always fun to get you on the show. We'll do it again next week. Thank you.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me as always.
And with that, we are out of time on this Pack Tuesday edition of the show. Coming up next, it's Meet the Candidates from Emory High School right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Be safe. We are out.